This is KGNU's Morning Magazine for Thursday, September 29th of 2022. I'm your host, Shannon Young. Thank you for joining us here on listener-supported community radio. Coming up on today's program, Colorado State University Pueblo hosted its first gubernatorial debate of the election season last night. We'll hear what transpired. Federal officials have announced $1 billion of funding for public schools nationwide. Then, John Lindorf will catch us up with local food news with Radio Nibbles. A BBC News update is at the bottom of the hour. After that, Sports Talk host Jimmy Searfoss teams up with John Lindorf for a live call-in show, Fair Play. Today they look at the ethics of college sports recruiting. Then at 9:30, it's the Morning Sound Alternative, playing an eclectic mix of music until noon. All that's still ahead this morning, but first, these headlines with KGNU's Claire Purnell.
A Colorado woman hit by a train while handcuffed in a police car in Platteville last week has taken initial steps toward filing a lawsuit against police, according to her attorney. Yareni Rios Gonzalez was detained for alleged road rage last week and in a police car parked on railroad tracks when it was hit by a Union Pacific freight train. She survived the collision but sustained multiple broken bones and other injuries. Her attorneys told 9 News she is in a lot of pain and facing a long recovery. Rios Gonzalez's mother and TSA agent left the hospital this week. Her attorney says the legal case against police is just getting underway. The Weld County District Attorney's Office also told 9 News that while no charges have been filed against Rios Gonzalez, there is still a potential criminal case against her. Starbucks employees from the 11th Avenue location in Greeley became the latest Starbucks to vote in favor of unionization. The National Labor Relations Board held a union recognition election at the Greeley Starbucks on Tuesday, where pro-union workers won by a margin of 20-1. The location is the 8th Colorado Starbucks to unionize, with Starbucks Workers United. The others are in Denver, Colorado Springs, and Superior. A location in Breckenridge will hold an election on October 18th. Telluride local and world-renowned ski mountaineer Hillary Nelson died in an avalanche after summiting Mount Manaslu, the 8th tallest mountain in the world, on September 26th. She was 49 years old. Nelson's body was recovered from the mountain on Wednesday, September 28th. Nelson was on an expedition with her partner, Jim Morrison. In a post on social media on Wednesday, Morrison says they reached the true summit of Manaslu in tough conditions on Monday morning. He notes they quickly transitioned from climbing to skiing with the intent to ski around the corner and regroup with their Sherpa team. Morrison writes, as she skied, Nelson triggered a small avalanche, was swept off her feet, and carried down a slope about 5,000 feet. Morrison says rescuers spent 2 days searching for Nelson by helicopter. On Wednesday, they were able to land at 22,000 feet and locate her body. A mother of two, Nelson's career as a mountaineer spanned 2 decades. She was the first person to complete a ski descent of Lhotse, the first woman to link Everest and Lhotse in a 24-hour push. She completed a double summit of Denali and was the first person to ski descent Paupsura Peak. She was named National Geographic Adventurer of the Year and a North Face athlete. Littleton Police Department identified what they described as a pipe bomb outside a Safeway on Tuesday. The device was found outside the Safeway at West Mineral Avenue and South Broadway on the afternoon of the 27th. Littleton Police spokesperson Shira Pullman told 9 News the timer on the bomb was broken and police are unaware of how long the device had been there. The Arapaho County Sheriff Bomb Squad determined the bomb was active and defused it. Authorities say they will investigate what kind of explosives were present, who put them there, and why. The City of Boulder's local hop bus service will resume its standard route on the east and west ends of Pearl Street in downtown Boulder starting Friday, September 30th. Via mobility services, the hop operators added signs to bus stops to notify riders of the upcoming service change. Riders can stay informed on hop bus routine and schedule information from the transit app. The Colorado State Veterinarian Office has detected a new strain of avian flu in the last few weeks. KGNU's Luis Lincoln has more.
The National Veterinarian Services Laboratory, NVSL, recently confirmed a new highly pathogenic avian influenza, or HPAI, in a commercial egg-laying facility in Weld County. HPAI is a highly contagious foreign animal disease that can be fatal in domestic poultry. The state's veterinarian office says it's taking steps to make sure that the public is aware of biosecurity and preventative measures to prevent birds and poultry from dying. Cases of HPAI in wild hawks have also been confirmed. Governor Jared Polis made a verbal emergency declaration and has funds to support the state's response to the outbreak. Colorado State Veterinarian Dr. Maggie Baldwin stated in a press release that cases of highly pathogenic avian influenza are on the rise again across the country as migration birds start their seasonal movement south. For KGNU, I am Luis Licon.
Louisville parents are concerned about Boulder Valley School District's decision to offer advanced math online. KGNU's Jimmy Searfoss has more.
BVSD parents are worried about possible technical glitches and too much online screen time for their children in response to the district's offer to teach advanced math through their online school, Boulder Universal. Around 230 BVSD elementary and middle school students are taking the class online. Many parents were unaware the class was even online until a few days into the year. Boulder Valley spokesperson Randy Barber said the district ran a similar math program online last year with 95th graders with promising results in terms of grade. Barber told the Daily Camera that Boulder Universal teachers are math certified and are trained to teach online classes about math. For KGNU, this is Jimmy Searfoss.
The weather forecast for KGNU listening area shows highs in Boulder today, 82 degrees with increasing clouds throughout the day. A little warmer in Denver, partly cloudy with highs reaching 84 degrees. In Fort Collins, expect a high temperature of 82, with mostly cloudy conditions by late morning into the afternoon. There's a chance of showers with a few thunderstorms over the mountains this afternoon, with isolated showers possible in the urban corridor and nearby plains later in the day. For KGNU, I'm Claire Purnell.
You are listening to The Morning Magazine. I'm your host, Shannon Young. Governor Jared Polis faced his Republican challenger, Heidi Gunnell, Wednesday evening in the first debate in Colorado's gubernatorial race. The two debated for about an hour at Colorado State University, Pueblo. Gunnell, a University of Colorado regent, began by criticizing Polis for being soft on crime, including his signing of a law that made possession of small amounts of some drugs, including fentanyl, a misdemeanor rather than a felony.
In the last 4 years, Colorado has become one of the most dangerous states in the country to work, live, and raise a family. The governor's soft-on-crime bills have made it dangerous to live here. When you vote, hold him accountable.
Polis defended his record, emphasizing recent legislation that increased police spending.
We delivered over $150 million to fund public safety. Working with Republicans and Democrats in the legislature, we didn't just talk about it, we got it done. What did that mean? Money to local law enforcement across the state of Colorado.
Regarding the economy, Gunnell reiterated a campaign promise to eliminate the state income tax.
I am going to take Colorado to zero income tax. He talked about it. I'm going to do it.
Polis hit back, criticizing Gunnell's tax proposal and emphasizing the different policies that save Coloradans money.
We delivered over $150 million to fund public safety. Working with Republicans and Democrats in the legislature, we didn't just talk about it, we got it done. What did that mean? Money to local law enforcement across the state of Colorado.
In response to Gunnell's accusations of him going too far, too fast, and plans to reduce the state's carbon emissions, Polis initiated a back and forth about the candidate's choice of vehicles.
Well, I thought you drive a Tesla, don't you?
I have. Our family has three cars.
So
yeah,
I drive an internal combustion engine, and I'm proud to.
I also have a Chevy Express conversion van with 120,000 miles on it.
Not everybody can afford a Tesla like my opponent.
Well, you can.
but I drive an internal combustion engine. I think that's all you need to know about it.
Why don't you walk the talk then, Jared?
Two more gubernatorial debates are scheduled in October. Federal officials announced yesterday that nearly $1 billion in funding will be available to public schools nationwide via the Stronger Connections grant through the bipartisan Safer Communities Act.
These are game-changing investments. As an educator, my whole career, I can tell you now, this is sorely needed in our schools.
That's Secretary of Education Miguel Cardona.
We're talking about support for things like addressing bullying and harassment, interventions to disrupt community violence and additional school counseling. Together with schools and districts, stronger connections can help us better respond to students' changing needs and support their incredible potential.
In a press call held yesterday afternoon, Secretary Cardona said the grants would help to advance equity, improve safety in schools beyond just the physical environment, provide culturally and linguistically affirming practices, and ongoing professional learning for teachers.
Since the beginning of the administration, the president has prioritized healthy schools as part of healthy communities, and the American Rescue Plan made $130 billion available to support students' mental health and their overall well-being alongside their academic recovery. If we want to expand equity and opportunity, we must expand our definitions of learning and growing to include mental and emotional health.
While the grants were described as historic funding opportunities, federal officials on the call largely stuck to prepared statements. Maureen Tracy Mooney, Special Assistant to the President for Education Policy, emphasized the bipartisan nature of the Bipartisan Safer Communities Act.
These investments demonstrate what we can do when we work together. Through these investments and the historic investments schools are making with American Rescue Plan funds to hire and retain teachers and counselors and provide tutoring, mentoring, summer learning, and after-school programs, and then put in place other high-impact strategies.
Making mental health services available in schools was a recurring talking point. Medical providers across the country, and in Colorado specifically, have said pandemic isolation and anxiety have created a mental health crisis for young people. Jesus Jara, superintendent of Clark County Public Schools in the Las Vegas metropolitan area, said he would like some of the newly announced funding to go toward social workers and online monitoring of students.
I think this number and the funding will be able to expand our social work opportunity with our social workers. Be able to use, again, some also monitoring tools, as Secretary Cardona mentioned, supporting of bullying. Now with everybody on computers, on technology, being able to monitor that experience.
Superintendent Jara said his district started a crisis line for students and sees great potential for online telehealth opportunities to consult mental health counselors. He also spoke of funding programs that team police officers up with social workers to carry out tasks like going into the homes of families of chronically absent students.
In 2021, we also launched a dedicated chronic absenteeism project up under this grant, attendance officers and really social workers going into the homes and really have one-on-one conversations with our families to address chronic absenteeism. As we secured our schools and protect our staff and students, we are proud to provide layers of security for our adults that will be able to alert our administrators and our police to provide assistance when needed with our new instant alert system. This year, we have social workers working alongside our police officers, changing really the dynamics of our police department to enhance intervention, prevention, keeping our kids in our schools, in our classrooms safely.
After that, facilitators opened a question and answer session, but with the caveat that answers from federal officials would be on background instead of on record. The Poynter Institute, a leading resource for journalism best practices, describes on background as a situation in which a source shares information that a journalist is free to use under the condition that the journalist should not attribute that information to a specific or named person. Some outlets refuse to agree to interviews on background, citing how it can be used to deflect accountability or cloud transparency. But after hearing about what sounded like plans to use a funding windfall to, in part, increase policing in schools, expand tools to monitor the online activities of students, and bring mental health counseling in-house without clarifying how it may impact confidentiality rights, I got in line to ask questions. But it didn't get very far. When I asked about funding for in-school alternatives, like bringing back the pandemic-era Universal School Meals program, I was met with a long silence, then a soft admonishment, and then a notice that I'd been muted. Moderators abruptly ended the call. According to the Department of Education, schools in Colorado are eligible for just over $9.3 million in Stronger Connections grants through the Bipartisan Safer Communities Act. You are listening to The Morning Magazine on KGNU. I'm your host, Shannon Young.
Have you ever wondered about what exactly you're supposed to do with your plastic? Do you throw it away? Recycle it? Are there different types of plastics? What's the difference between them? Well, here's what recycling expert Rosie Briggs has to say about handling plastic in this week's Recycling Recap.
So there are unrecyclable plastics both in the way of the resin that it's made of and in the item that it shows up in. So some examples of resins that we really don't like to see in the recycling center because they're largely just globally unrecyclable are your number 3, 6, and 7 plastics. So 3 is PVC, 6 is polystyrene, and 7 is kind of like the catch-all category. And then outside of those categories, there's a lot of items that can't be recycled just because they're too small, too brittle, too contaminated, whatever. So like straws is a good example of that. Three, you're right. It obviously shows up as, yeah, like PVC piping, but you also see it as like a shower curtain, a lot of toys, a lot of cosmetic plastic. So like face cream, stuff like that. And then, yeah, 6, we would know it as styrofoam. That's kind of like what the layperson calls it. It's called polystyrene. Sometimes you would recognize it as foam. Sometimes you'd recognize it as like a solo cup or a condiment cup where it's just really crunchy and kind of crappy. And then 7, yeah, it can kind of be anything. Yogurt cups tend to be a 5, which is pretty recyclable. But that being said, 7 could really be anything. It's just kind of like, what, we don't know what it, like, it's something else, put it in the 7 category, like slap a 7 on it. So sometimes it's kind of crappy plastics, a mix of 2 plastics. Sometimes it's corn plastic, which is industrially compostable. And it's a bummer because that plastic is not, it's not real plastic, it's made of corn. It's not petroleum plastic. We can't recycle it because it's made of corn. But when they started making corn and other bioplastics, you know, in forms that looked so much like plastic, they decided to put a number on it. And that number was 7 because it's the catch-all category. And so we see a lot of these compostable plastics, which should be going to the compost. And we understand why you would be confused about that numbering.
Well, folks, you heard it here. That's all we have for this week's Recycling Recap. Thanks for tuning in. Support for this series comes from the Boulder County Zero Waste Funding Program.
It's time for Radio Nibbles. John Lindorf, the food editor of the Boulder Weekly, has a special guest, two special guests actually, Jessica Benjamin of First Bite Boulder and Joshua Link, general manager of Carita. Welcome to you both.
Thank you.
Thanks for having us.
And good morning, everyone. This is John Lindorf joining you from my home studio, and good to see you guys.
Good to see you, John.
Good morning.
Nice to be here. Good morning.
And we're here this morning to talk about First Bite, which started 17 years ago. I remember when I first heard about it, and at first, you know, nobody was interested. You know, and then slowly people got the idea of First Bite, and it's gone on in various forms over the years, but the past few years have really changed things. So, Jessica, talk a little bit about what First Bite is this year, because it starts tomorrow, right?
It does. It starts tomorrow. Tomorrow morning, for the first time ever, we are doing breakfast, brunch, lunch options, as well as dinner. And this year, you'll also find price points of all sizes for people to choose from whichever budget they are fitting in right now.
Yeah. Right. But it's basically 10 days to discover what Boulder has to offer. There's a tremendous number of new restaurants that are involved. And maybe you could give one example of, you know, what what that means for diners.
Sure, absolutely. Yeah, for the next 10 days, we have 33 restaurants participating, offering special menus, everything from a coffee and a shortbread to a five-course meal. We have 14 brand new restaurants participating for the first time. And some of those include Gemini, which is local, Faro in Niwot, even The Sink, which has been around for a long time, but participating for the first time.
I thought that was fascinating. You know, I think, you know, in the old days, the Sink wouldn't have been part of the discussion because First Bite was primarily, you know, multi-course dinner with wine pairings,
yes,
that kind of thing.
Yeah, exactly.
And so this is sort of broaden the tent that First Bite includes.
Yes.
And maybe your guests could talk about what you're offering for First Bite.
Absolutely. So at Carita, we're going to be doing what we're calling the First Bite Tapas Flight. Carita is a Spanish-inspired chop house, and we have a great tapas selection. So we wanted to highlight that part of our menu and something that's kind of fun and easily approachable. So we're doing the Tapas Flight with a couple of wine pairings. On our flight, we have three small bites. So we're going to do one bite is Mahon cheese with some black truffle, and we're serving that on our house bread, our Spanish olive oil bread. And then we're doing some shishito peppers that we flash fry, and we toss with a little bit of togarashi spice, which is actually a Japanese spice blend. And then we're doing some salchichon and chorizo Iberico ham charcuterie as well on the plate. And then to pair, wanted to highlight some wines that maybe people don't try every day. So we wanted to showcase sherry. So one of the wines will be Bodegas Yusta. It's their Aurora Manzanilla sherry that's been aged in the seaside town of Sanlúcar de Barrameda. Sherries are one of the greatest food wines of all times, and I think a lot of people have a misconception of what sherry is. And so this is a nice dry sherry with notes of salinity and almonds that just pairs so wonderfully well with things like charcuterie and little salty snacks. And then we're going to do a glass of white Rioja. It's Gomez Cruzado, their white Rioja made from the Viura grape. I think a lot of people are familiar with red Rioja and don't realize that the Rioja region of Spain makes some incredible white wines as well.
I had no idea.
I think that's a perfect counterpoint there. If you go to the Sink, you can get a pizza deal for four, a burger deal for two, and perhaps live out your ill-spent college years. Carita, if you don't know where that is, it's actually it's located on top of the building where
one of the best views in town.
We used to print the Daily Camera right below there, and it has a stunning view. Jess, talk a little bit more about some of the other sort of kinds of dining experiences that are part of First Bite. Again, First Bite starts tomorrow. It's 10 days of special meals that are designed to kind of get you out and, you know, dining.
Yeah, we want diners to explore. We want them to taste around town, and Carita's offering is exactly a great place to start. Taste some tapas, have some wine, venture out to another place, have a little bit more food. So we're excited to host everybody.
Right, but there's some breakfast. There's some
we have lunch, great breakfast
there's
options.
Some, lunch.
Yep.
It's quite a variety of
it is.
Places.
It is. You can find all of the menus on our website at firstbiteboulder.com. We have them sortable, so you can check out who's offering brunch and breakfast options. Carita is also doing a brunch option as well, which is kind of new for them.
And so, Joshua, where are you going to go to First Bite?
Oh, that's a great question. The choices are overwhelming. I haven't figured it out yet.
You probably don't get out to eat that much.
Not as much as I'd like, that's for sure.
Well, I think we should make an arrangement for that so that you can get out and try something. One thing we always do on Radio Nibbles is ask our guests what's the best thing they've tasted lately. And Josh, why don't you start? What's the best thing you've tasted lately? that wasn't at Carita.
And
if you need to think a minute, then Jess can answer.
I have one. My mom made me her famous meatballs, known as meatballs, for my birthday a week ago. So that was the best. I don't get that as often as I used to.
And my best was I was down in Golden visiting a friend, and I, as I like to do, I punch in things into GPS and went, barbecue near me, and realized that Roman Buffalo, wonderful barbecue place, had opened a place in Golden. And so I had smoked bison ribs and some wonderful pulled pork, and it was a joy.
Yeah.
Josh?
I just recently, for the first time, got to go to Basta here in Boulder. And actually, their Caesar salad was just incredible. I'm kind of a Caesar salad snob, so they really did a great one.
Wonderful. And let's see. You're probably wondering what's in radio. What's in the Nibbles column in the Boulder Weekly today? it's further details about First Bite. And it kind of gives you an opportunity to kind of see some of the different menus, including what Basta's offering, and some of the meals that are available are pretty interesting. What I would encourage people to do is to go ahead and make your reservation soon, because a lot of the people grab them.
Yes.
I bet it's time to wrap things up here.
It is. But first, let's, John, tell people where they can find your Nibbles column. The URL, please.
You can find Nibbles at boulderweekly.com. You'll also find the cuisine pages there. There's recipes and my various dining adventures. This week is about the Baig Naan. It's a curry from Curry and Kebab on 28th Street.
Well, we're going to have to leave it there, John.
A bunch of other tasting opportunities.
Great. Well, that's all the time we have for today's Morning Magazine. I've been your host, Shannon Young. Special thanks to Claire Purnell, Luis Licon, Jimmy Sirfoss, John Callan, Maeve Conran, John Lindorf, and Alexis Kenyon. Stay tuned for the BBC News headlines.